Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr., Susan Shand, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
The European Union and the world's largest palm oil exporters, Malaysia and Indonesia, are having their own trade dispute. In March, the EU announced that it would stop supporting palm oil as a transportation fuel by 2030 because of environmental concerns. The EU has linked the intensive growing of oil palms to deforestation in Malaysia and Indonesia. Now, the countries are threatening to bring a case on the issue to the World Trade Organization. Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad told Reuters that the EU is risking a trade war over grossly unfair policies that looked like protectionism. Mohamad also said Malaysia would seek to buy new warplanes from China and not European companies if the EU stopped its palm oil trade. Reports say Malaysia is considering a deal for new fighter jets worth as much as $1 billion. The Malaysian Palm Oil Council is an industry group based in Malaysia. It warns that the new EU rules would hurt Malaysia's palm oil industry, which, it says, makes up 6% of the country's total economy. The EU is turning away from palm oil because new rules mean that members will not be able to count palm oil biofuels toward their renewable energy targets. The EU says the crop is the cause of deforestation, which does not help efforts to limit carbon emissions linked to climate change. Malaysia says the EU's concerns are overblown. Peter Mumford is with the Eurasia Group, which advises on political risk. He said that Europe does not want to be seen arguing against its own environmental policy. And he said the countries that wish to sell Malaysia fighter jets might not have enough influence to change the policy supported by the European Commission and European Parliament. Shankaran Nambiar is with the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research. He said Malaysia's palm oil exports are not a small matter and that Mohamad might want to continue to press the issue. He also said China and Russia may be willing to buy more palm oil. India is the largest market for Malaysia's palm oil. The EU is second, followed by China. Malaysian Defense Minister Mohamad Sabu spoke to reporters about the issue. He said that China, Russia, and other countries might be willing to trade defense equipment for Malaysia's palm oil. Malaysia is suffering from the effects of heavy public debt and a weak economy. Trading oil for jets might appear like a good possibility. China has proved willing to barter in the past, and their jets would be less costly than European ones. But John Gravatt said that there was little discussion of buying from China in March at Malaysia's Langkawi International Maritime and Aerospace Exhibition. Gravatt said Malaysia still is probably 5 to 10 years away from buying new light fighter airplanes. In that time, the new EU rules will more likely show their effects. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
The Chinese government has a plan to link the cities of Hong Kong, Macau, Guangzhou, Shenzhen, Zhuhai, Foshan, Zhongshan, Dongguan, Huizhou, Xiongmen, and Zhaoqing into an economic and business powerhouse. It will be called the Greater Bay Area. Some in China's central bank are looking to the European Union and Britain to decide how best to do this. The Greater Bay Area already has a total economy almost equal to Australia's. But the area is divided because Hong Kong and Macau have their own money and legal systems. This makes integration difficult. China's central bank's branch in Shenzhen created a 295-page report on financial and economic integration in the Bay. It suggested building a single market similar to the 28-state European Union. The report was written with China Merchant Bank's chief economist and published last month. The report notes some of the benefits of European integration, but it also points to some of the problems China faces as it tries to control an area that already has international financial markets, industrial centers, and technology sectors. In the report, the head of the Shenzhen Central Bank, Xing Yu Jing, was clear about the importance of the free movement of people and money in the Bay. The report also pointed to what could be learned from Britain's planned exit from Europe. The European Union and the common market have strengthened the welfare of the European people, the Shenzhen branch of the People's Bank of China said in a statement. It added that suggestions do not represent official policy positions. Britain has made professional decisions to reduce the effects of Brexit while keeping integration with European economy and finance, the report also said. In the Greater Bay Area, there are still borders between Hong Kong, Macau, and mainland China. This is the result of the One Country, Two Systems agreement that permits the two cities to keep their way of life while under Chinese rule. I'm Susan Shand.
The United States Space Agency, NASA, says its Mars exploration vehicle recently recorded a high level of methane gas on the planet. The discovery is exciting because the presence of methane gas could support the case for life on Mars. NASA's Curiosity vehicle recently recorded the largest level of methane ever measured during its 7-year Mars mission. Methane has no color or smell. A special instrument on Curiosity's Mars Science Laboratory recorded the increased gas level. The device, called a laser spectrometer, measures levels of chemical elements and gases in the Martian atmosphere. In addition to methane, the instrument can record levels of water and carbon dioxide. Nearly all the methane gas found in Earth's atmosphere is produced by biological activity. It usually comes from animal and plant life. But it can also be formed by geological processes, such as interactions between rocks and water. NASA said the increased methane was measured to be about 21 parts per billion by volume. 1 ppbv means that if you take a volume of air on Mars, 1/1,000,000,000 of the volume of air is methane. It was not the first time Curiosity has found methane gas in the Martian atmosphere. About a year ago, NASA announced that Curiosity had discovered sharp seasonal increases in the gas. This time, NASA said the measured methane gas level was clearly larger than any others observed in the past. NASA officials even temporarily stopped Curiosity's other activities to investigate further. It's exciting because microbial life is an important source of methane on Earth, NASA said in a statement announcing the discovery. However, Curiosity's team carried out a follow-up methane experiment that showed a sharp drop in levels of the gas. The second examination found the level was less than 1 part per billion by volume. That number was close to the background levels Curiosity sees all the time, NASA said. The rise and fall of the methane gas levels left NASA scientists with more questions than answers. The scientists are continuing to study possible causes for the sudden increase. The methane mystery continues, said Ashwin Vasavada, Curiosity's project scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. We're more motivated than ever to keep measuring and put our brains together to figure out how methane behaves in the Martian atmosphere. Curiosity does not have instruments that can exactly identify whether the source of the methane is biological or geological. One leading theory is that methane is being released from underground areas created by possible life forms that disappeared long ago. Even though Mars has no active volcanoes, scientists believe it is also possible that methane is being produced by reactions involving carbon materials and water. A clearer understanding of methane levels over time could help scientists determine where they're located on Mars, NASA said. Scientists hope this understanding will come as Curiosity continues to collect methane data in its search for possible life. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We look back at the presidential election of 1976. When Vice President Gerald Ford became president in 1974, he took office during a crisis. For the first time in American history, a president, Richard Nixon, had resigned. Nixon resigned as a result of the case known as Watergate. It involved the cover-up of illegal activities related to his re-election campaign. Lies about Watergate only added to the mistrust of Americans angry at having been misled about the war in Vietnam. After Vietnam and Watergate, many people no longer believed their public officials. Voters rejected Gerald Ford, a Republican, in the presidential election of 1976. Instead, they chose Jimmy Carter, the candidate of the Democrats. Why? One reason was that Ford had pardoned Nixon. He declared a pardon for any crimes that Nixon might have committed. This made many people angry. Also, he refused requests for federal aid for New York and other cities. Voters may have felt that he was not concerned about the problems of poor people. Others believe that unemployment and inflation defeated Gerald Ford. He was not able to deal effectively with these problems during his short presidency. There was competition for the Republican Party nomination in 1976. Ford's chief opponent was Ronald Reagan, who had just served two terms as governor of California. Democrats thought that voter anger about Watergate would help their party win the White House. 11 Democrats campaigned for the nomination. Two well-known politicians did not campaign, but they said they would serve if no other candidate won the party's support. They were former Vice President Hubert Humphrey and Senator Ted Kennedy. One of the lesser-known candidates was the former governor of Georgia, Jimmy Carter.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president.
Political experts gave him little chance of winning the nomination. Most Democrats did not even know who he was. Before becoming governor, he had been a nuclear power engineer in the Navy and a peanut farmer in Georgia. Again and again, he told people that he was not part of the political establishment in Washington. He also had strong Christian beliefs. This appealed to a lot of voters. Many voters supported Carter in the primary elections leading up to the party's nominating convention. His victory in the Florida primary was especially important. He defeated another politician from the South, Governor George Wallace of Alabama. Jimmy Carter represented what was called the New South. He made it clear that he opposed the ideas of the Old South, like discrimination against blacks. George Wallace spoke of creating a better life for both blacks and whites. Yet, he had strongly defended racial separation for most of his political life. Many people remembered pictures of Governor Wallace at the University of Alabama in 1963. The pictures showed him blocking the door to prevent two young blacks from attending the school. The Republican primaries had mixed results for President Ford.
Right now, I predict that the American people are going to say that night, "Jerry, you've done a good job. Keep right on doing it."
For example, in New Hampshire, he won only 51% of the vote. Ronald Reagan won 49%. But in Massachusetts, Ford won twice as many votes as Reagan did. The campaign showed that Reagan was more conservative than Ford. For example, Reagan talked strongly about United States control of the Panama Canal. In his words, "We built it, we paid for it, it's ours, and we are going to keep it." President Carter would later decide differently. Ford, in his campaign speeches, denounced extremism. It was clear that he was talking about his opponent, Ronald Reagan. Ford and Reagan won almost the same amount of support in the Republican primaries. Yet, many delegates at the nominating convention remained undecided. This was a dangerous situation for the Republican Party. Party leaders did not want a fight over undecided votes at the convention. They worried that a lack of unity could damage the party's chances in the general election. The situation was similar for the Democrats. Support for Jimmy Carter increased. But some Democrats who did not like him began to say, "Anybody but Carter." Carter's campaign message was that he did not have ties to special interest groups, that he would be different.
"I see an America that is turned away from scandals and corruption. I see an American president who governs with vigor and with vision and affirmative leadership. A president who is not isolated from our people, but a president who feels your pain and who shares your dreams. I see an America on the move again, united, its wounds healed, an America entering its third century with confidence and competence and compassion, an America that lives up to the majesty of its Constitution and the simple decency of its people. This is my vision of America. I hope you share it, and I hope you will help me fight for it."
Many people liked what they heard. Carter won the Democratic primaries in Georgia, Alabama, and Indiana. The other candidates fell hopelessly behind. At the party convention, he was nominated on the first vote. In his acceptance speech, he repeated the line that he continually used with voters.
"My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president."
Carter said there was a fear that America's best years were over. He said the nation's best was still to come.
1976 will not be a year of politics as usual. It can be a year of inspiration and hope. And it will be a year of concern, of quiet and sober reassessment of our nation's character and purpose. A year when voters have already confounded the experts. And I guarantee you that it will be the year when we give the government of this country back to the people of this country.
Walter Mondale, a senator from Minnesota, became the party's vice presidential candidate. A month before the Republican Party convention, Ronald Reagan made a costly political mistake. He said that if he won the nomination, he would want Senator Richard Schweiker of Pennsylvania as his running mate. Conservatives got angry. Schweiker was a liberal Republican. Some political observers say this is why Reagan lost the nomination to President Ford. Many of the delegates wanted Reagan to then be Ford's running mate, but Reagan was not interested in becoming vice president. Instead, the nominee was Senator Robert Dole of Kansas. Nonetheless, Reagan received a long and enthusiastic response from the convention delegates when Gerald Ford motioned for him to come down and join him at the podium.
If I could just take a moment and I had an assignment the other day. Someone asked me to write a letter for a time capsule that is going to be opened in Los Angeles 100 years from now. We live in a world in which the great powers have poised and aimed at each other horrible missiles of destruction, nuclear weapons that can in a matter of minutes arrive in each other's country and destroy virtually the civilized world we live in. And suddenly it dawned on me, those who would read this letter 100 years from now will know whether those missiles were fired. They will know whether we met our challenge. Whether they have the freedoms that we have known up until now will depend on what we do here. Mr. President.
It was a preview of the strong and confident speaking style that would serve Reagan well 4 years later. Indeed, as the future president, Ronald Reagan would be known as the great communicator. The general election campaign started in September 1976. One newspaper said the campaign left voters feeling sleepy because it was not very interesting. Ford and Carter agreed to debate each other on television. No one had done that since 1960, when Richard Nixon and John Kennedy had several televised debates. Many people thought Ford did a little better than Carter in the first debate. In the second debate, however, President Ford made a mistake. He wrongly suggested that the Soviet Union did not control Eastern Europe.
I don't believe that the Yugoslavians consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. I don't believe that the Romanians consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. I don't believe that the Poles consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. Each of those countries is independent, autonomous. It has its own territorial integrity. And the United States does not concede that those countries are under the domination of the Soviet Union.
Carter responded,
I would like to see Mr. Ford convince the Polish Americans and the Czech Americans and the Hungarian Americans in this country that those countries don't live under the domination and supervision of the Soviet Union behind the Iron Curtain.
The third debate did not have a clear winner. Opinion polls showed that many voters were still undecided. In November, Jimmy Carter won the election. He received 51% of the popular vote. President Ford won 48%. A lot had changed in the 2 years since Jimmy Carter began to receive national attention. Most Americans had never heard of him before. Now, many of those same people had just elected him the 39th president of the United States.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.